Madison woke with a start to the sound of an engine revving somewhere outside. She jerked upright.
Ow! Shit!
Her exhausted muscles and tender flesh protested the movement. Something was happening. For now, at least, the farmhouse was empty. She looked around freely, eventually focusing on the small window at the far end of the kitchen. It looked out onto the drive that led up to the farmhouse. She saw a flash of white. Momentarily, Madison allowed herself to believe that help had arrived, that her prayers had been answered, that any moment now the Bureau's hostage rescue team would crash through the building's front door, pump a hail of lead into the terrorists who had taken her, and snatch her away to safety. It didn't last. She slumped forward slightly, ignoring the pain this caused in her bound wrists as reality crashed home. Even so, she kept her eyes glued to the little glimpse of freedom she could see through the small window to the outside, drinking in every detail. A Sprinter-style van had just pulled up outside, maybe two of them, judging by the dual engine sounds she'd heard. Despite the crushing, ever-present terror of her current situation, a gleam of interest fired up in her chest. At heart, she was a detective. She liked solving problems. This was a fresh clue. The sound cut out, and for a brief moment, she heard only peace, then the opening of car doors.
Okay, think.
It was already clear that more terrorists had arrived. She could hear at least three new voices, though not what was being said. How many operatives did ISIS have on U.S. soil? It was hard to believe that so many had been lying in wait all this time. If they were gathering now, that surely had to mean that they were nearing the climax of whatever it was they had planned. It also fit with her own kidnapping. Drawing the wrath of every federal law enforcement and intelligence agency was too great a risk to take unless an operation was imminent. But what the hell were they planning? Madison attempted without any luck to force the jigsaw pieces to fall into place. She heard the farmhouse's front door opening, then the scrape of footsteps on the floor. She craned her neck as the sound of voices grew louder, closing her eyes in order to help her focus. A scrap of conversation floated through the air, the words spoken in Arabic, a language she translated easily in her mind.
Khudni, ilayha.
Take me to her.
A second voice.
Ya Raiso, alayka antantara. Halatuka, laiset yalama. Yuramu.
Boss, you need to rest. You're not looking well.
Alanya, Umaru.
Now, Omar.
Madison's face drained of blood. This couldn't possibly be happening. How was he here? She physically shrank away from the door into the kitchen, pressing her shoulders against the back of the chair. The role reversal couldn't have been starker. Only a couple of weeks earlier, she was the one planning to interrogate a prisoner. She was the one who thought she was in control. Yet somehow, Khaled al-Shakiri had been one step ahead of her this entire time. She watched as the door started to open. Her mouth went dry, and she would have started to shake if she hadn't squeezed her fists tight, digging her nails into her palms, and forced herself to maintain the barest semblance of control. As the door swung open, Madison was caught in two minds, whether to keep her eyes averted from the devil or to meet him in the eye. She chose the latter. The door opened fully, and she would have thrown up her hands to shield her eyes from the sudden brightness flooding through the open front door behind if they weren't bound. Her pupils narrowed, and it took a moment before her vision came back into focus. Her breath caught in her throat. It was him. Strangely, Madison felt none of the sheer terror that she had imagined these last couple of days. She'd created a monster in her mind, and yet Khaled al-Shakiri was a pitiful, broken thing. He was sitting hunched over in a wheelchair, sweat glistening on his forehead. He wore a wool cap over his head despite the mild weather, and a gray t-shirt clung to his torso. It was difficult to be sure, but she thought she detected a scent of sickness even at this distance. She cataloged all this in an instant, her mind already whirring. Something must have happened to him in between his escape from al-Shaddadi prison just a couple of weeks earlier and now. Blinking, she cast her mind back to his prison file, a document that she had studied countless times and had practically committed to memory. Madison remembered that he'd sustained severe internal shrapnel injuries during the final days of the Caliphate. He hadn't been fully processed into the SDF prison camp system for over 3 months, the intervening time spent in the hospital, and his injuries had never been fully treated. With his hands on the wheelchair's handles, she recognized the powerful frame of Al-Shakiri's chief lieutenant, Omar. It seemed he'd traveled a different path over the past couple of weeks. His frame had filled out rather than shrinking.
I'm glad you could make it.
Madison had a strange energy flooding through her, despite her precarious situation. Her cough triggered a searing flash of pain from one of the many bruises on her front.
I wanted to register a complaint. Your hospitality is terrible.
She sagged forward as she finished speaking, the movement tugging against her zip-cuffed wrists. She willed herself back upright, not wanting to display weakness. As Omar pushed the wheelchair further into the kitchen, the door began to swing closed behind him, but not before she caught sight of something interesting. Her captors were beginning to move boxes into the farmhouse. It was impossible to tell what was in them, but the men looked happy. Just as the door swung shut, she caught a glimpse of a man she didn't recognize. She couldn't be sure, but she thought she glimpsed the same zip cuffs on his wrists as she sported on hers. He looked terrified.
Who the hell is that?
I take no pleasure in causing pain to a woman.
His face grew tense as he spoke, but she suspected that the words caused him as much agony as they did her.
Doesn't seem to have stopped you.
Show respect.
Omar brought the wheelchair to a halt a couple of feet from her. He stepped closer, leaning over her, rage smoldering on his face.
Enough, brother. Leave me alone with her.
But is it...
Look at her. She cannot hurt me. You can wait for me outside.
Omar gritted his teeth, but obeyed.
He is well trained.
Now that the terrorist she had chased for so long was right in front of her, Madison was sure that he was unwell. Hell, he looked like he was barely clinging to life.
He believes in me.
I can't imagine why.
Al-Shakiri shook his head.
You wouldn't.
What do you want from me?
She felt a strange liberation from her current powerlessness. Nothing she could say or do was likely to alter her chances of surviving, so she embraced it.
Why am I here?
Why were you hunting me?
It's my job.
He continued to shake his head.
I think not. I remember you from the prison grounds. I saw the look in your eyes. This is personal for you.
It's just business.
As she lied to him, hatred was swelling in her breast as she remembered what had happened to her former friend, Mark.
I'm good at my job. If my boss tells me to hunt you down, you better believe that's what I'm gonna do.
Don't lie to me!
Madison hated herself for flinching. She'd glimpsed true evil in his eyes.
Tell me why I'm here.
You are CIA, correct?
She nodded, but remained silent.
What do you know about what I have planned?
The walls are closing in, Khalid. You might as well give up now. We might not know everything, but it won't be long before we do.
I don't think so.
We found your hideout in Indonesia, didn't we?
Madison replayed her final conversation with Jason in her mind for anything she could use to convince him.
We know what you were building. Whether or not I survive, my friends will find you. And you will fail.
Tell me, what is it you think I am building?
Madison silently glowered back at him.
If I say the word, Omar will come through that door, and he will not stop beating you until you break.
Your people already tried that.
They are amateurs.
His gaze was still burning into her, as though he was trying to interrogate her soul.
Omar is not.
No, just a psychopath.
She recognized the false bravado in her own tone.
Do you think I will be able to strike the White House, Madison?
What?
She replied before she had a chance to stop herself.
It is well defended, is it not?
Madison swallowed before replying, thinking fast. Something about his question struck her as off. Why attack the White House? It had to be one of the most heavily defended sites in the country. She didn't buy it.
That's not your plan.
No, it is not. But thank you. You have told me exactly what I needed to know.
Panic washed through her.
What are you talking about?
You don't know my plan. At least, not enough to stop it. I congratulate you for coming so close, but it will not be enough.
Omar!
What are you planning to do, you asshole?
Al-Shaqiri smiled as Omar began to push the wheelchair out of the room. The thought seemed to give him fresh strength.
I intend to kill your president, Miss Grubb. And I will make you watch.
Special Agent Pope stepped into the break room in one of the vast exercise halls at the FBI's training facility in Quantico. The space contained a smattering of furniture that looked as tired as they did. Trapp had just sat down at the lunch table after running down yet another fruitless lead submitted to the FBI's anonymous tip line. Just outside the room was a nerve center set up on the floor of the basketball court where tables of agents analyzed every piece of information the Joint Task Force received. And since the initial appeal on local news had been clipped and then gone viral on TikTok, that was a lot.
Anything on your end?
Squat. It's been, what, a couple of days and they're still flooding in.
Yeah, I just got back. Guy saw a suspicious van parked up near Potomac Airfield. Turned out to be some hobo sleeping off a three-day bender.
Pope glanced at his watch.
Shit. It's almost midnight. I need to take my kid off the babysitter before she threatens to dump her with social services. Again.
Trapp looked longingly over at the coffee percolator.
Go. Anything comes up, I'll give you a call.
Get some rest, Jason. You've barely slept in 48 hours. You won't do anybody any good if you're too tired to think.
You're probably right.
I know I am. See you back here at 5 a.m.?
You got it.
Madison started as she became aware of a presence in the kitchen with her. She didn't know how long she'd been asleep, but it was dark out. Once again, they had left her alone for several hours while they did God only knew what outside, though not before tightening her restraints and forcing her into an ever more contorted pose. Every inch of her body protested with agony. She looked up to see a familiar face in the gloom of the kitchen, on the other side of the dining table. He was staring directly at her, which explained the prickling on her skin.
Ricky?
Huh? How do you know my name?
Madison steadily met his gaze. 2 days had passed since she'd seen the news report, but her chance was finally at hand.
I saw it on the television. That's what your mom called you, right? Ricky?
Keep her out of it!
He glanced around to see if anyone heard. He looked like he was falling apart.
Okay, I will.
She thought quickly, sensing that she had a window of opportunity here which she needed to seize, but also that it was a fundamentally unstable one. Ricky was searching for an out. She was almost certain of it, but that didn't mean she would be successful in offering him one. If she pushed too hard, he might as easily shut down, or she could trigger a self-defense reaction. It would be a narrow tightrope line to walk. He said nothing, so she probed.
What are you doing here, Ricky?
Still, he didn't reply. He took a few steps toward her, eyes flickering anxiously around the room and a muscle pulsating on his jaw. He seemed to half close his eyes for a moment and just listen, then peered through each of the doorways that led into the kitchen. When he was satisfied that he was alone, he passed the dining table, picking up a half-empty plastic glass of water and proceeded to her side.
We don't have long.
He seemed on the verge of hyperventilating. Madison tried to sound calm despite her own desperation.
Okay, I get that. So what do you want?
I want out. I thought once I got back from Syria that it was over. I did bad things out there. I wake up every night thinking about them. Shit, I was so dumb.
So what are you doing here, Ricky?
He pulled me back in. They sent me back after training. This was years ago. He told me to slip back into the country and live like I never left. They said they had big plans for me. But then the caliphate fell. I thought it was over. I felt, I don't know, relief? Even when I was out there, I knew I had fucked up. ISIS wasn't what the forum said it would be, you know? I just thought I was gonna get a wife, have kids, live in some kind of paradise on Earth.
Madison sensed she was losing him.
Who pulled you back, Ricky?
The guy in the wheelchair. His name is Khal.
I know who he is.
Rage flashed in his eyes, momentarily beating back fear.
Then you know what he'll do to me if he catches us talking. We don't have time to play games like this. I just need to know. Were you telling the truth about what you said? Can you help me get out of this mess?
Okay. Okay.
Madison needed him scared, not angry.
You're right. We don't have long. Cut my wrists free.
He gripped her upper arm tightly and squeezed. The pressure on old bruises sent another wave of pain flashing through her nerves. She gritted her teeth.
Tell me!
Of course I can help you. You know who I work for, right?
Yes.
We can arrange a new identity. The marshals will move you somewhere safe. Set you up with a new life, a job. You can leave all this behind. It'll be like a bad dream.
Ricky swallowed and blinked a couple of times as if picturing the vision she was painting, then nodded once.
What do I gotta do?
Madison didn't dare believe that she really had him.
Like I said, just cut my wrists free and help me out of here. You do that, I promise I'll help you out.
He shook his head violently, splashing a few drops of water from the glass in his free hand. Madison felt the hope die in her breast.
It's too dangerous. The big guy, Omar, he scares me. He's like on patrol the whole fucking time. I'm only in here because I saw he was checking out the field. No way I could get you out of here in time. I have to carry you.
I can walk.
Yeah, right. Not after what we did to you. Besides, it's a long way to the road. No way to get you there without being seen. There has to be some other way.
Madison's eyes widened. She remembered the cell phone she had kicked underneath the kitchen counter, and then the number for the tip line that she'd memorized. It seemed insane to share her backup plan with one of the men who had quite literally kidnapped her.
What other choice do you have?
The answer was none.
Do you have a cell phone?
He shook his head.
I did, but when Omar arrived, he took them all.
She had hoped not to have to reveal her secret, but she was out of options.
What about the address for this place? Did you know that?
Of course. I found it.
Okay.
Madison closed her eyes for a second as a wave of exhaustion rocked her. She prayed that she was about to make the right decision, that she'd correctly surmised the character of the man kneeling at her side. She was under no illusions that he was somehow a good person. He had joined an international terrorist group of his own volition, gone to Syria and been trained by them, then returned to his homeland to lie in wait. But he was also a scared, stupid young man. He'd probably figured he was in the clear for years after the fall of the Islamic State. The last few days would have been as terrifying for him as for her. Almost.
Under the kitchen counter. There. You see it?
He turned his head.
Huh?
The cell phone. Quickly. Get it and text this address to the tip line. When the cavalry arrives, lie down on the floor, okay? Make sure you aren't within a country mile of a weapon and spread your arms and legs wide so that the agents see you're not armed. Do whatever they tell you.
Where the hell did you find this thing?
Ricky scrambled toward the cell phone and dropped the glass he'd been holding. It rolled across the floor, sounding as loud to her as a fireworks display.
Do you remember the number?
Ricky shook his head as he stuck his hand underneath the counter, and she reeled it off.
What's happening in here?
Madison froze at the unexpected sound. She hadn't heard anyone approaching, and yet somehow he was here, standing in the doorway. Omar. She watched in dismay as he examined her bound frame closely, then mounting horror as he started to turn his head in Ricky's direction. The young terrorist was crouched on the floor, the cell phone in his left hand, frozen with indecision and fear. She had to do something.
He tried to touch me.
She said it as loudly as she could, hoping to attract Omar's attention.
That son of a bitch tried to fondle me. You guys are creeps. You pretend to be religious, but just get away from me!
She dared not look at Ricky. She needed Omar's eyes on her for as long as possible, even though his implacable gaze terrified her. She had never felt more alone, more terrified than she did right now. Omar finally turned toward Ricky.
Is this true?
Madison swallowed hard, realizing that her chest was heaving. She looked at Ricky and almost fainted with relief when she saw that he was now standing, the cell phone nowhere to be seen.
I was just trying to give her water.
He pointed at the water and the drinking glass on the flagstones. The lie was paper thin. Madison could tell that Omar didn't believe it.
Yeah, you gave me water just so you could get close to me, right? Tell him that you touched me.
Omar grimaced and pointed toward the doorway.
Out! Don't come in here again unless I directly instruct you to. Understood? And get some sleep. You have a big day ahead of you tomorrow. You need to be rested.
Ricky nodded hurriedly and beat a hasty retreat. Madison held herself upright, not daring to heave a sigh of relief. She still wasn't entirely certain that Omar had bought the ruse. And even if he had, would Ricky go through with what he'd promised? She shivered, realizing there now was an added tension. The terrorists were clearly closing on the climax of their plan. Perhaps this was what had driven Ricky to her.
We're in a race against time.
Omar walked toward one of the large water cooler bottles that the terrorists had trucked in, since the plumbing no longer functioned in the old farmhouse. He tilted it and poured a fresh glass, then brought it to her. He tipped it against her lips, and she drank greedily, hating how easily she gave in to the desperation of thirst. He was surprisingly gentle in his actions for a man she knew had committed so much horror. Just being in a room with him made the hair on the back of her neck stand up. He put the glass down and turned to leave.
I'm sorry for him. It will not happen again.
It's up here somewhere.
Pope quickly glanced at the map to make sure. It showed a road surrounded by fields, deep in the countryside outside of Baltimore. He slowed the big vehicle a little, but didn't stop. His voice was hoarse from exhaustion. They'd started early that morning, and this was already the day's sixth stop, all busts.
Tipline got an address, that's all. Probably nothing.
Trapp scanned the information packet the joint FBI-CIA task force had pulled together in record time. If he'd been in the right mind to take a step back and examine the big picture, he might have been impressed with the efficiency with which thousands of employees were running down even the longest shots and the speed with which the analysis was being pushed out into the field.
Maybe.
He dragged his finger up the touchscreen of the FBI-issued tablet computer.
But I got a hunch about this. The number that sent the text was clean, like never been used before.
Could be a burner or a crank.
That was the issue with going public. Even the most minor law enforcement requests to the public resulted in a fire hose of mostly nonsense tips from the borderline insane and citizens who were more concerned about their neighbors keeping their front yards neat and tidy than wasting police time.
Want me to call in and request backup?
Trapp considered the idea. It would take at least half an hour, and probably longer, to spool up proper backup and get it out here. If she was in there, that was time that Madison might not have.
Let's take a look before we make that call.
You got it.
Park it up there.
Trapp gestured at a pullout about 20 yards down the country lane. It was hemmed in on either side by thick branches and foliage that together cut off most of the view of the sky.
We'll go the rest of the way on foot.
Sounds good.
That was something Trapp liked about working with the man, despite the fact that 99 times out of 100, this visit would end up with nothing to show for it. He didn't complain. He was old-fashioned like that. Preferred knocking on doors to the so-called police work carried out from behind a computer screen, which seemed to be all the rage these days.
I need a gun.
His tone brooked no argument. Pope didn't bother trying. Pope gestured toward the trunk.
In the back.
The FBI vehicle contained a hard case lockbox that was bolted to its chassis. Unlocking it required both a keypad and a corresponding physical key. Trapp understood the reason for all the security. It contained a veritable armory. Two pistols, both Glock 19s, Bureau standard issue. On top of that was a single Remington 870 12-gauge shotgun and a Colt M4 carbine. Also in the back were a pair of ballistic vests and two FBI raid jackets, the letters stenciled in yellow on navy blue. After donning one of the vests, Trapp picked up the M4 and several magazines of ammunition. Pope wordlessly took the Remington. Trap also stuffed one of the Glocks through an elastic loop on the front of his borrowed ballistic vest as Pope shrugged one of the raid jackets on.
I'd let you borrow a jacket, but it's probably expressly forbidden somewhere in U.S. code. I'd have to look it up to be sure. But then again, ignorance is no defense against the law.
But letting me use a Bureau weapon is fine, eh?
I don't know where you got that thing.
Pope shrugged as he closed the lockbox.
If anyone asks, neither do you.
Where I got what?
The two men turned and surveyed the target. A few pale tufts of cloud scurried across the narrow patch of otherwise blue sky visible through the trees bracketing either side of the road. It was a pleasant October day, and despite their proximity to the urban crime and decay of the city of Baltimore, this far out from the center, the terrain was positively bucolic.
What do you think? Down the road or across the fields?
Trapp didn't like either option. The fields were likely too exposed from the farmhouse, but the road leading up to it was almost certainly covered by security cameras.
Let's take a look.
They crept toward the turning to the farmhouse. Thankfully, the back road was quiet. They hadn't passed another vehicle in the previous 20 minutes, and none swept past now, alleviating the need to explain what they were doing with heavy weaponry in a place like this. Pope pressed himself up against the fence, a few feet short of the turning. He craned his neck up and peered around.
I don't see any cameras.
They could be anywhere.
To the left-hand side of the road leading up to the house was an open field. It didn't look recently tended from what little they could see of it. The grass covering it had grown about knee-deep before becoming top-heavy and collapsing in on itself. Wildflowers had seeded the space and now provided flashes of color in random patches. Trapp looked up and saw that one side of the farmhouse looked across the wide-open field. He cursed the fact that it wasn't planted with crops. Head-high wheat or corn would have been a treat right now.
It's a risk. Someone looks out of one of those windows and they'll see us coming half a mile out. We'd be sitting ducks.
I agree.
The field to the right of the road was segmented with hedges and had partially been planted with fruit trees. They didn't provide complete cover, but it was better than nothing. More promisingly, Trapp couldn't see the farmhouse from this angle. He jerked his head toward it.
That way.
Agreed. You lead. Remember, we're just taking a look. We don't have a warrant.
Uh-huh.
Damn it, Jason. There are rules.
I said, uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Trapp hid a smile. He needed the banter. He was running on empty. He was almost certain now that Madison was dead. The only reason he was still going was to bring those responsible for it to justice. He hopped over the fence, wincing as the aged wood let out a crack. They were still at least half a mile from the farmhouse, and there was almost no risk of being overheard, but it was a good reminder to be careful, even so. Pope followed, choosing a different spot. The two men crept through the quasi-wood. Brambles caught on Trapp's jeans, the thorns digging in just enough to draw blood from his shins before the next step tore them loose. A few spikes broke off and remained embedded in his flesh, causing sufficient pain for him to grit his teeth without rising to the level where he needed to stop and do something about it. Rotten apples and pears coated the ground underneath the orchard. Trapp half expected to see wildlife passed out around his feet, blackout drunk from consuming the fermented fruit, but there was none. He paused at the edge of the line of trees, crouching and gazing in the direction of the farmhouse.
See anything?
The first prickling of adrenaline was starting to get to work in his system.
Looks clear to me.
Let's keep going.
Roger that.
They stuck to the fence line on the left of the field, which ran parallel with the road toward the farmhouse, though separated by a section of untended land several feet wide that was thick with foliage and trees. Trapp paused after about 5 minutes and pointed toward the road, aiming his finger toward a metal post.
See the cameras?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't made much attempt to hide them. Hopefully that holds true on the route we're taking. But keep your eyes peeled.
This ain't my first rodeo, Jason.
They reached a hedge, which acted as the boundary of the subdivided field they were crossing. Trapp dropped to his belly and crawled underneath it, disturbing a thick pile of leaves that had accumulated beneath, along with the thick colony of insects nestled within. He paid neither any attention, not stopping until he was able to see what was on the other side.
Come see this.
It took Pope a few seconds to join him. Trap gestured out at the field, which seemed neatly tended despite its proximity to the supposedly abandoned farmhouse. The half of the field closest to their current position was as wild and unkempt as the rest, but the grass nearest the building was neatly trimmed. A riding lawnmower was visible, parked near the fence to their left by a pile of what looked like household trash at the edge of the cropped lawn.
Interesting. Looks like someone's home.
Trap flipped the plastic cap off his rifle scope. It provided about 4x optical zoom, only enough to give a little extra clarity to the picture his naked eyes were showing him. He swept the sight across the house first, searching for any watching eyes. When he found none, he made a careful pass across the field. Only about half of it was visible from where they were currently lying, with the rest blocked off by a decrepit barn whose red paint had long ago been replaced by a darker shade of rust.
Whoever cut that seems pretty anal. Grass is cut closer than Fenway Park.
The scope passed over the pile he'd initially mistaken for household trash. Trap stopped it dead.
Wait.
What is it?
This is the place.
Trap wished he had a bit more zoom at his disposal. The pile was composed of wooden slats that appeared to be parts of packing crates. A heap of polystyrene pellets, the type used to prevent damage to items in transit, had been swept a few feet in every direction by the wind.
You sure about that?
Call it a hunch.
Trap delved into his memory to see if he recalled coming across anything similar on the raid in Indonesia. He grimaced after nothing came to mind.
Something about this feels off. Why cut the grass?
A hunch isn't enough for a warrant, Jason.
Who said I needed a warrant?
Jason.
Shh. Hear that?
Hear what?
Trap frowned as a low roar from a passenger airliner echoed high above as it passed over them.
The airplane.
Yeah? What about it?
It's too high up. Unless these assholes have somehow built a Patriot missile while living in their mother's basement. This farm is about the worst location possible to fire off a surface-to-air missile if you're planning on actually taking something down. We're missing something.
It's underneath the flight path, no?
Too high up. A Stinger would have trouble hitting that thing. No way a homemade rocket has a better shot. I'm not buying it. Besides, even if this was their planned launch site, why cut the grass? There's no need.
Hold up. I see movement.
He swiveled the rifle scope back to the house, quickly catching sight of what had attracted his friend's attention. One of the doors had opened. For a few seconds, nothing happened. Then two men exited, standing close together. One of them was enormous, perhaps even taller than Trap himself, or perhaps that was just an illusion caused by the slight build of the individual standing next to him.
What do you see?
Trap watched as the two men walked swiftly across the area of cut grass, heading toward the section behind the barn.
I'm not sure.
Trap was squinting so hard that his forehead began to ache from the effort. The larger man walked a step behind the other. His skin tone seemed darker than his partner's, but from this distance it was difficult to be certain of that fact. His brain might as easily be filling in the details he wanted to see, but he sensed it wasn't. That man was Omar. He was almost sure of it. But almost wasn't enough. He focused on Omar. He was wearing dark jeans and had a checked shirt. He looked like any other suburban dad. His right arm was extended across the opposite side of his body, the hand hidden behind his bulk.
What is he holding?
The frustration was building inside him. He kept his eyes on Omar.
Any way we can get some air support up here? Something that won't attract too much attention, not a helicopter. You guys still operate those Cessnas, don't you?
ACLU's been right up our collective asses on those. Civil liberty lawsuits up the wazoo. But yeah, we have them.
Do it anyway.
He was still tracking the two men as they passed behind the barn.
Shit, I lost them.
What do you want to do? We know someone's in there. Maybe we send an agent in undercover. Parcel delivery guy. Hell, maybe a woman would be better, less threatening. These guys don't seem to think they're worth much.
Their loss.
Madison's face swam across his vision. Another passenger jet passed overhead. Pope reached inside his raid jacket. A fresh sound joined the jet roar a moment later.
What's that?
Trap brought the rifle scope back across, but couldn't see anything. He pulled his eyes away from it for a moment and checked that the lawnmower was still where he'd last seen it.
Hell if I know. Sounds like a vacuum cleaner, but a bit louder. Leaf blower, maybe?
Loudest blower I ever heard. No way.
Whatever the sound was, it was joined a moment later by another blast of noise. Trapp racked his brain as he tried to figure out what the two men were up to, but came up blank.
We need to get closer.
Trapp glanced left and right as he tried to figure out the best route. Was anyone left in the house? Maybe it would be best if they went right down the center of the field and headed straight for the barn. It was even money that they would remain undetected.
Agreed.
But even as Pope spoke, the pitch of the sound changed. It almost reminded Trapp of a jet engine building to takeoff velocity. But that was impossible. He pictured the map of the area in his head. He remembered the offset grid layout of the fields all around. There wasn't a runway for miles.
Oh, shit.
What?
There was a runway after all, Trapp realized. It explained the cut grass. It explained everything. Al-Shaqiri had never been building a missile. He was building a drone. Two of them. They emerged from behind the barn at the same time, their noses already reaching up into the sky. The rear part of their landing gears were still zipping along the bowling green surface underneath. As Trapp watched, both drones launched fully into the sky, almost immediately pulling up into a steep climb. Each was about as long as the Suburban they'd driven here in, if a fraction of the bulk and weight. They were painted the same gray as a Predator drone, though even at this distance it was clear the paint job wasn't as professionally administered. Within seconds, they disappeared behind the tree line to Trapp's left, already traveling at speeds that had to be well north of 100 miles an hour.
Call it in. We need backup here ASAP.
Pope already had his cell phone in his hand. He looked up with a hint of surprise on his face as Trapp pushed himself up into a crouch.
Where the hell are you going?
I don't know what they plan on hitting, but those fuckers are moving fast. We don't have time to wait for backup. This thing will be over by the time it arrives.
As Trapp sprinted toward the barn, he cursed himself for being such a fool. He'd been so myopically focused on the theory that Al-Shaqiri was intending to bring down a passenger plane that he'd never considered other options. Drones weren't the weapons of the future. They were already here. Only a couple of years back, the Houthi rebels in Yemen had attacked a major Saudi refinery, increasing global oil prices by tens of dollars a barrel and costing the global economy billions of dollars. There were persistent rumors that the Venezuelan president had almost been assassinated by a cheap store-bought quadcopter jerry-rigged with nothing more specialized than a hand grenade. Hell, the Iraqi prime minister had even posted pictures on Twitter of the debris left on his roof after his own failed assassination attempt. But all of those attempts, to Trapp's knowledge, had been carried out with technology scarcely more advanced than that used by amateur remote control plane enthusiasts. Somehow, Al-Shaqiri had gotten his hands on miniaturized jet turbines. That changed the game entirely. A propeller-powered UAV was limited to maybe 100 miles an hour, perhaps 50% more at the outside. The drones they just saw had lifted off at that speed. There was no telling how fast they could fly once they reached cruising altitude. At least 200 miles per hour. Probably a damn sight faster than that. They would be limited only by the fuel they carried on board. Trapp cast his mind back, trying to remember if he'd seen any external fuel tanks, and decided he hadn't. The UAVs had been long, but not bulky. They'd almost looked flat-packed.
That explains how they made it into the country.
How long could they remain in the air? 20 minutes? Half an hour? Hell, that was enough time to reach the White House. Pope caught up to him as he reached the barn.
They lifted off a minute ago. The task force is already aware. They're working up a list of potential targets as we speak.
Can they see them on radar?
I don't know.
Pope glanced at his cell phone.
Damn it, the signal dropped.
Forget about it.
Trapp sidled up to the barn and crept toward the far edge. He peered around it and watched as the two men disappeared back into the farmhouse, walking fast as though in a hurry. There was still no sign that the incursion of Trapp and Pope had been detected. But just before the door closed behind them, he saw a flash of a pistol in Omar's hand, and then they were gone.
Shit, Jason. I think I know the target. The president's holding a rally right here in Baltimore, today. I saw it on the news. He's kicking off his campaign. Every news outlet in the country will be carrying it live.
Where?
Oriole Park, the baseball stadium. That's a half hour's drive from here. Maybe 20 miles as the crow flies.
Both men stared at each other, knowing Pope was right. It was the only conceivable target. Even Trapp remembered seeing a headline about Nash's campaign launch rally a couple of weeks earlier. Perhaps it had been the plan all along, or maybe just an opportunistic target. Either way, it was the nightmare scenario. Glancing at his watch, Trapp ran a worst-case calculation in his mind. The drones had been in the air for almost 2 minutes already. If the UAVs were traveling at, say, 300 mph, they'd be doing 5 miles a minute. They might already be halfway to the target.
Call the task force now. They need to get the Secret Service to crash the president. Don't wait. Just do it. If they hesitate, he's dead.
On it.
Pope was already bringing the phone to his ear. Trapp stared at his watch, willing the second hand to slow. If anything, it seemed to speed up. He watched as 5 full seconds ticked past as the FBI agent waited for the call to connect, picturing the two drones rocketing across the sky as he did so. There was too much latency in this, he knew. His dread building as Pope finally made it through to the switchboard. They needed him to be put through to the right person immediately. That person would hesitate, imagining the consequences for their career of pulling the president out of his campaign launch announcement, only for the supposed threat to turn out to be a false alarm. Even once they made it past that hurdle, the FBI would have to get in touch with the Secret Service. It would take at least a minute if everything went perfectly, then the same for the message to get out to the president's detail.
Shit, we can't wait.
Adrenaline was pulsating through him as Pope finally finished delivering his terse warning. The terrorists would be watching Nash's rally on live television. Even if the Secret Service managed to crash the president in time and pull him out of trouble, there would be 20,000 innocent Americans in that stadium. There was no way of pulling Nash out of there quietly. At the first sign of the chaos that would inevitably ensue, Al-Shaqiri would know the game was up. But he would still have two drones in the air. Trapp thought that the political obsessives who took time out of their day to go to campaign rallies were weird, but even they didn't deserve to die for their devotion.
I know we can't wait. What's your plan?
Trapp gestured toward the farmhouse.
I have to be controlling those things from in there. We need to put a stop to it.
You think Madison's still in there?
Pope had hit the nail right on its head. This entire tactical situation was FUBAR. They were about to run a 2-man building clearance against an unknown number of enemies, with a friendly hostage almost certainly inside. And the goal wasn't, couldn't be, to save Madison. They had to head off the threat to President Nash, even if it cost an innocent life.
Stay tight to my six.
If his calculations were even in the right ballpark, they were now running under the 100-second mark to stop this.
I'll take left. You take right. Copy?
Yep.
Trapp quickly brought the scope to bear on the farmhouse, scanning each of the outward-facing windows in turn. He didn't see anyone looking out, but he didn't have time to be sure.
Let's go.
He clutched his rifle as he sprinted the 25 yards between the barn and the main farm building. Powered by adrenaline and weighed down by his ballistic vest, weapons, and ammunition, Trapp's lungs felt like they would burst. Judging by the ragged sound of Pope's breathing, he was suffering just the same. The two men stopped against the outer wall of the farmhouse. Trapp, hitting the left-hand side of the doorway where the suspects had entered just a few moments before, and Pope, the right. 90 seconds.
Go.
He pivoted around his left shoulder and took a step back as he limbered up to kick the door in when Pope squeezed the shotgun trigger. The spot where the door handle had been disappeared in a shower of dust and splinters. Trapp adapted fast and charged toward the door. Already weakened by the gunshot, it shattered inward as he struck it. He brought his own weapon up quickly, scanning left and right as his eyes adapted to the interior gloom.
Clear!
They'd entered the kitchen. It smelled faintly of a combination of fast food grease and recently applied disinfectant. There was a cell phone charger on the kitchen table. Trapp took in a set of cut plastic zip cuffs still lying on the floor, and a circular smudge of something that could only have been dried blood on the flagstones.
Covering right.
Pope held his shotgun steady. Two doors led out of the kitchen, each into a different section of the farmhouse.
Let's take yours.
What mattered now was speed. They had no idea how many terrorists had been left here to guard the launch site, or if Al-Shaqiri was here himself. If he allowed them even a few seconds to think about their response, he and Pope might pay the ultimate price. And if Madison was still alive, so would she.
Got it. I'll breach.
Counting on it.
The two men closed toward the door. The noise of Pope's weapon was almost deafening inside the confines of the kitchen. This time, the broken interior door swung backward of its own accord. The hallway behind was dark. Trap stepped through the so-called kill funnel.
Clear.
Covering behind.
It was an open doorway to the left. It led into a living room that contained a set of 1960s floral print couches, the designs only barely visible under a thick coating of several years of dust. An old CRT television. There were no signs that the room had seen any recent attention. The windows were still covered by exterior shutters, which only allowed light to enter where they were already damaged.
Clear left.
Following.
Trap pulled open a door a few feet up the wall on the right, heart pounding, relaxing only when he discovered nothing more threatening than an overstuffed closet.
Clear.
He glanced down at his watch.
60 seconds.
We need to pick up the pace, Jason.
No shit.
Trap spun toward the final door remaining in the hallway, the one at the very end. He took a step to his left so that his shoulder grazed the wall as he moved forward. It likely saved his life. Half a dozen holes punctured the wooden door. Trap's animal brain begged him to run as far away as physically possible, but he ignored it. It was only 2 feet to the door. He closed on it in a single stride, hugging the left-hand wall as he moved. Another shower of splinters flew through the air around him. He didn't hear Pope's footsteps.
You okay?
I'm fine.
Pope's face was a shade of purple, and he struggled for air. He slumped against the wall to his right for support, lowering his weapon as he probed his ballistic vest where he'd been hit.
Go!
Shit!
Trap didn't have time to find out whether his friend was okay. His heartbeat pounded jerkily in his chest as it struggled to provide enough oxygen to a body that was thirstily sucking it down. 50 seconds. He steadied himself. It cost him another whole second. Breaching on his own was suicidal, but what other choice did he have? Pressing the stock of his M4 hard into his shoulder, Trap angled the barrel sharply downward, aiming it at the door's lowermost panels. He paused, losing another second, then squeezed the trigger. The rifle bucked against his shoulder, and his ears rang from the crack of gunfire in the confined hallway. He drew his right leg back and smashed his heel into a spot half an inch to the right of the door handle. The door swung open and he threw himself inside. He emerged into a dining room. The long wooden table at the center of the room was covered in a thin sheet of transparent plastic. He swept the room, feeling the familiar sensation of stress tightening the noose around his vision. The edges of his gaze were fuzzy and indistinct, and growing more so with every passing second. Movement. Trap spun, his finger tensing on the trigger. He squeezed. The rifle butt thumped against his shoulder. A throaty cry echoed out as a flash of bright red painted the white walls. A mixed-race male slumped back, a pistol dropping from his hands and thudding against the floor.
Shit.
Trap knew he didn't have time to kick the weapon out of reach. He squeezed his trigger one last time. The man's skull exploded. There was only one other door leading out of the room. It was over to the left, and Trap figured that meant the room behind angled back around toward the kitchen's other door, the road not taken. 40 seconds.
How you doing back there, buddy?
I'm good. Just a little winded is all. Took 3 right to the chest. Wait. Shit, I'm bleeding.
Stay right where you are. Cover the door behind you.
Roger that.
Trap moved toward the door that the dead man had tried to defend. It was closed. This had to be it, surely. Trap scanned the doorway. The door looked like it opened inward. It was impossible to say whether or not it was locked. Wishing he had Pope's shotgun, he drew his pistol and took 3 long strides toward the door, hiding behind the wall to its left-hand side. He moved as silently as possible, aiming his pistol at the door handle.
Jason!
He fired before his brain processed what he'd just heard. He knew that voice. It was Madison.